things are uncomfortable to you. The thought of doing these things just makes you want to cringe. But you know that somehow, if you don't do them, you might regret them. Well, that's what this show is about today. You are listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure with myself, Jennifer Breeden, Linda Martinelli, who is a business goddess and serial entrepreneur, the incredible Taz Thornton, an international motivational speaker, entrepreneur herself, and of course, a pink-headed powerhouse. I love that. I had to add that in there. And Malcolm Out Loud, the great Malcolm Out Loud, our wonderful Oz, who brings us all together to talk about these important issues. But there are so many things in life that I think we end up looking back, I know myself included, and go, man, if only I could have done that, or I'm so glad I did that. I remember how scared I was. Like doing the hard things, doing things that we think are too hard, traveling somewhere we've always wanted to see, but just there's always an excuse. We never find the right time. Being strict about making time for the right people, choosing yourself too, choosing yourself rather than laying down anything your desires for others, everybody but yourself.
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure.
That's what this show is about today, and we're just going to talk about some of the issues. There's actually an article that came out written by Mark Chernoff, and it's called The 18 Uncomfortable Things You Need to Do If You Don't Want to Regret 2018. I don't think it's just about 2018, but I think some of these topics are very pertinent for today, some of those which we're going to talk about today, especially with not only with Malcolm, with myself. I'm an entrepreneur myself, an international criminal law attorney. But Linda Martinelli and Taz Thornton, both of these incredible, remarkable women who I'm privileged to be on with today, have not only started their own businesses, multiple businesses, but continue to educate themselves, to go around, to speak, to motivate, and to really inspire women, not just women, but people throughout the world. Taz in the UK, Linda Martinelli here in the United States. And so it's going to be a great show today. And I'm just excited to get this started. But I wanted to start this off with Taz. And, you know, Taz, I know that there are a couple of these points that you've seen. And I think us being entrepreneurs ourselves, we face a lot of fears mm-hmm. that people avoid. But are there certain ones, not only on this list, but just certain uncomfortable things or aspects that you've seen either in speaking or working with people that generally make them think twice, or things that you wish you could say, you know, if you were speaking to an audience of people who you know have passions and desires but haven't quite taken that step? What advice would you give them?
Yeah, absolutely. And it does tie in with a lot of these points. There's something I've been talking about to a couple of my clients only this week, and it has to do with expectations. If we drill right down, I reckon the number one thing that makes most people unhappy or really pissed off with their lot is the expectations they have. It's that we create this picture of what we want our life to be, what we want our relationships to be, what we want the world to be like. And when we get upset is when it just doesn't live up to that. Real life does not live up to the picture we've painted. So we need to be a lot less rigid. We need to stop setting people up for a fall, and mostly ourselves. We need to stop getting annoyed because things are not playing out as we want them to. And that goes for everything through business, right through to family breakdowns. How many family issues? You know, when you hear of these families with a big split, or kids not talking to their parents, or spousal issues, how much of that comes down to one of the parties not living up to the expectations of another? And that's something I think we all need to learn from. So that's what this sparked in me. All of these points we're going to discuss, at some point, I think they kind of come back to that.
I love that.
And I think that you're absolutely right there, because when you expect things from other people and you don't receive them from other people, you tend to blame everybody else. So you're kind of looking outward for your happiness. And the truth is that you are responsible for your own life. Yeah. And you're responsible for 90% of what happens in your life. So you have to make those, you have to become accountable to yourself and to what the outcome of your life is. And when you do that, and when you take charge of yourself and of what goes on around you, instead of having it be an outside influence, wonderful things happen.
Yeah.
We just need to, understand that this blame game that everybody does is like her fault, his fault, somebody else's fault. We need to stop that and take ownership, and then just we can do anything.
Absolutely. As individuals, for each one of us, actually, it's all our fault. We might not be able to control the external stuff, but we can absolutely control the way we react and respond to things. And I think that's where we trip up. We're afraid of this blame game because we don't want to blame ourselves. We think, well, all those areas in life, all those mistakes, she says, making air quotes, that we made, you know, that's our fault. But all the good stuff's your fault too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love that you guys are saying this, because I completely relate to this, expectations. You don't want to think that you're trying to live up to others, but it kind of coincides that whole aspect of other people's expectations or your own expectations because of what other people have done. Yeah. I found that at least in starting, like paving a path, it also goes it coincides and it goes hand in hand with the aspect of being a pioneer, starting something new. I mean, we're talking about starting a business or doing something, but our lives tend to be unique. And so if we see somebody, everybody always says, well, you know, if you want to do this in your life, find somebody who's done it and, you know, follow their path, but our paths will never be the same. So we are essentially always going to be pioneers. That's going through a path that's never been paved. And so no expectations actually matter, because nobody has your life. Nobody has your circumstances. Nobody has your personality, your characteristics. And so even, you know, and I think that advice almost has kind of been a hindrance to me, is, well, find somebody else who's done something you want to do and, you know, follow that path. But they're never going to be the same as me. And my goals in life and my mm-hmm. outcomes might be totally different the way they're lined up and supposed to be, the way they're destined to be. And then I'm always going to feel like a failure because I didn't line up to this person. So I'm wondering what you guys think about that, because that's something I've struggled with too, is this aspect of pioneering. And it's okay, you know, maybe there's not going to be anybody, but that means there's no book on this.
Absolutely.
I was told at one point something that I've always remembered, and that's kind of to hang out with people that are more successful than I am. And, you know, when I began my career, that's what I did. I hung out with people that were on a higher level than me in business, that already knew what they were doing. And I was like a sponge, grabbing everything that I needed from them. It doesn't mean that I was going to do the same thing that they did. It just means that I took for me what was of value. And you can move yourself forward so much. So if I would have hung out with, say, the people that were maybe in a less successful category, that's where what would have been my aspiration at that point. You know, I would have had nothing to follow. So I think that when Jennifer's talking about, you know, pioneering, you don't have to pioneer the way somebody else does. We all do it our own way, but boy, we can pick up all those jewels from other people that have done things successfully and, do it our own way.
I think there's a couple of ways that we trip ourselves up though, and absolutely agree, but I think we trip ourselves up. The first one is, we've already touched on it, this idea that we have to find somebody else who's done the same thing before and walk before and step into their footsteps, which is great if you want to be the same as everybody else. But we're missing the point. It's not about copying what they do. It's about taking inspiration from them. It's like, okay, how did they get from A to B? Can I learn from that? Do I need to do the same, or can I just be inspired to go my own way based on how I've seen them doing it? And the other way I think we trip ourselves up, touching on what you just said, Linda, is hanging around with people of, you know, who are a couple of steps ahead of us and being the sponge, you know, use every day, adopt the attitude of the hungry learner every day. But I think where people trip up there and where they ruffle feathers and make enemies unnecessarily is, again, instead of being inspired by someone, there are a lot of people out there who try to follow that path and actually end up just taking from people. And, you know, almost stealing their stuff and sticking their own brand on it. It's not about that either. We can learn from people without emulating. And I think that's where people need to be really, really careful with that line.
I love that. I love that. I wanted to touch on the first one because that was brilliant. And so we talked about this list, this article, and I wanted to go over, especially with you ladies, I wanted to go over the number one on the 18 uncomfortable things to start doing for fulfilling 2018. Number one, and this stuck out to me. I know it stuck out to you guys. I'm sure it has, especially, you know, Linda and I are both in the U.S. Taz is in the U.K., so this issue has definitely come up. But number one is challenge your understandings and certainties. And it says here, life's richness does not come from always residing within familiar territory. It's when you venture out away from the familiar that you grow stronger, more capable. You must hold tightly to your core values, yes, while at the same time opening your heart and mind to new ideas, feelings, and experiences. Your own perspective will become clearer when you look at things from different angles. And I love that because to me, I mean, I'm an international criminal law attorney. I studied terrorism. I studied counterterrorism. I studied Islam when I was in law school, some of the aspects of it, the radical elements, the general elements. And so we see, you know, these ISIS attacks, you know, calling out things in the name of Islam, this radical Islamic thing. And then there's three voices kind of shouting at us. You have the, you know, you have voices asking, okay, what's going on? What's happening here? Who are these guys? Then you have the voices that are saying, this is horrible. We should clearly never have any Muslims around ever. Stay away from them. They're horrible. Or then the other voices, the opposite ones, saying, it's not Muslim at all. It's not Islam. And you're an Islamophobic person. If you do that, you're not allowed to even say anything that even questions Islam or even says anything that in any way might indicate that Islam had a part of this. And then silencing other people. And so, you know, one of the things I did when I first started working in this field, I studied it first, and then I started traveling to the Middle East and really just stepping into their shoes. And so many things I found out, like not only just the perspective from how the Muslims live in those areas, but how Muslim is kind of put on your birth certificate when you're born, depending on your family. It's not even like a choice most people make. And most people have never studied it. They never study the text. And so people are saying, well, if they truly follow the text, then they'll be violent. Most people just don't. How many people are quote unquote Christian that go to church Easter and Christmas? And and it's actually, I still am able to fight counterterrorism and still am able to speak about radical Islam. But that's because I know Muslims in the Middle East that say it. And so challenging my understanding and certainties actually really did help me to be better and to solidify and clarify my perspective. Rather than and bringing both sides together, rather than I guess bashing one side or the other, because I think both sides are wrong in that either never say anything or they're all evil, and it's been really good. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that point.
I absolutely agree. And when you talk about this stuff, well, firstly, I suddenly have a massive Jennifer crush going on. My goodness, the work you've done, amazing, amazing stuff.
Also, blushing here.
You're welcome. Yes. Blush away, blush away. See, I picked that off my list today. I made a blush. Excellent.
Yes.
This is one of the issues we fall down on all the time. Again, it's tribal mentality, isn't it? It's real Lord of the Flies stuff. Whichever tribe we identify as, then everybody else is wrong. And sometimes if we don't quite have a tribe that we fit into, we suddenly leap into one if we want to jump onto the bandwagon. It's crazy. I could go off on one here. You know, I've had shows on here before where I've talked about my issues with the word evil because we so easily band that about as a label. It's just differences. We're all different. And, you know, people who are uneducated on this start talking about all the deaths in the name of Islam and how Muslim people are all bad. And you think, well, hold on. Just look into this. Look at the stats. Look at how many people have died in the name of Christianity. It outweighs it. It's crazy. We need to stop giving things a label, stop finding an excuse to a reason to batter people with, and instead try and find the common ground. Why is this happening? How do we start finding the similarities instead of the divisions? We are not going to do that until we start to challenge, as this list says, our understandings and our certainties, because most of our certainties are on real thin ice.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that.
And one of the things that I learned when I went through life coaching school to be a life coach, which I don't actively do, by the way, but one of the things I learned that was just valuable in life, and you can take this just in your own home and all the way globally. So we would have to stand in a circle and look at things, a problem, from the perspective of other people.
Yeah.
So let's say it's a family situation, and you can look at one of the people in that circle is going to be your mom, maybe one your husband, one your child, maybe one your employer, and you go actually move yourself around that circle and you put yourself in those people's shoes. What would that person say to you about that situation? And when you start looking at things from somebody else's perspective, it gives you a whole new perspective on things where you can really get that common ground that Taz is talking about, and you can understand how other people see things. And it's helped me in so many ways in my life to look at things through maybe my employee's eyes, or maybe my husband's eyes, or maybe one of my kids' eyes. And it's the same thing with looking globally around the world, through, as Jennifer said, through, you know, somebody of a different religion's eyes as best you can, and then come to some, you know, a better understanding. And I think that that will give us more, you know, just more peace in life and more ways to communicate with one another.
That is such a powerful technique. And, you know, there's another thing that we need to do, but it takes a lot of courage and self-belief to do it, is constantly question ourselves. Every time we find ourselves coming out with a blanket statement, even if it's just in your tiniest inside voice, just ask, what if I'm wrong?
I love that. That to me is such a powerful question, because, you know, I want to take it back. You both touched on this so eloquently, and I love that. Is the aspect of politics. I know Taz in the UK, I want to start with you, and especially Linda and I here in the US, but the political differences, I'm just going to go with left and right, because I know the party names are different, everything like that. Left and right, and the some of the vehemence and the hatred coming out of both sides towards each other, when the common denominator should be the betterment of civilians in the country. And so I wanted to take just a couple seconds, and then I think we can come back after the break and touch more on that, on how it's affected specifically where you are.
Well, for me, the trouble with the left and right is that the lines are becoming more and more blurred. You know, I guess if I had to put things right down in solid terms, I kind of waver between center left and center right, depending on the situation. But the trouble for me is identifying as left or right. Because center left and center right, there's really not much between them. But then the extremes start to get further and further apart. And before you know it, somebody who has, for instance, always voted right and has center right feelings suddenly finds they're voting for someone who's far more extreme. And because they've always done it that way, then it starts feeling a little bit dangerous and a little bit different. And I think that's what's happening. Certainly over here, the polls are moving further apart. And nobody's stopping to think, well, hold on, I might have always voted for that party, but these views are quite different to the ones I was initially voting for.
That is amazing. And actually, we're going to come back to the break. We're going to come back after the break here and speak with Linda, and then I can touch on this about politics in the U.S. I think what Taz said was brilliant, very well worded, and it's exactly what we're seeing. I mean, you don't have to cross the pond to see how far politics are getting, but we are going to be right back on Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure with your greatest fears and the things that make you uncomfortable.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. I am here with Jennifer Breeden and Taz Thornton, the two marvelous, intelligent, wonderful ladies of Life, Liberty, and the very quiet Malcolm Out Loud. I am Linda Martinelli, and we're discussing all of the ways that you can make your life better. And where we left off here was about politics and how divided we are today. And Taz talked about how she feels in the UK and how things are going over there. And it's really very similar here in the United States, where we are divided. We are left and right and far left and far right and almost no middle ground, where my belief is that we really have quite a lot of middle ground. And one of the things that I have learned on Life Liberty for my own self is that in talking with these ladies, we have some that are very liberal and some that are very conservative. But the one thing that we do have is we have a common respect for one another. And this is what we're missing in our country today. We are just having such a vitriolic conversation in this country about politics. We're focusing on that type of thing that makes us different and not the things that make us the same. And the things that make us the same are far more valuable than the things that make us different. And there are far more things that make us the same. So why, Jennifer, why are we focusing on only the differences instead of any of the things that really are common grounds?
Well, I think it's a little bit like Taz said as well, even what's going on in the UK, but here it's, for one, we're always told we need to be placed in a box. We need to be labeled when it comes to our politics. So we're either raised in a Republican family or a Democrat family. We're either raised with left or right values. And so that's all we ever think we are. We're told, we're taught, we're raised as that. And so even if we might have an idea that's more centered, more moderate, we vote with what we know, because it's not okay. There is no independent candidate that ever has a choice. There's no moderate candidate that ever even has a chance to win anything in the United States. No moderate, no center. If you tried to run as a center or a moderate or an independent or something in the middle, you'd be chased out of town. I mean, we had a couple of those even this last election. There's not even a chance for it. And it's because we become so comfortable with this two-party system, this you're either left or right. And so even people that have more moderate viewpoints and can find some common ground in the middle don't have a party. They don't have a voice. They don't have a chance. And they're told that your vote is actually going to harm, you know, the overall issue. It's going to harm your overall Democrat party or your overall Republican party candidate if you try to vote for this third party, who's just going to take votes away from one of the only two parties that will win. And that's what makes it harder, because then at that point, we kind of just give up on having moderate viewpoints and we find the one thing that we care about. And, you know, many Americans these days care about jobs. So they'll vote for the one candidate that can get them more jobs, and no other issues matter. National security doesn't matter. Nothing else matters, because on these issues, you know, you have a lot of people that do have more common ground and might be more centered in their approach, but they have nobody to vote for that would ever have a chance. And they're told if you try to vote for a middle ground person, you're only going to take votes away from an actual candidate that could win. And so people just kind of give up on even looking into some of the issues or thinking about it, and really go with their gut instinct or the one issue that they care about, which is either money or economics. It's also then, because of that, made a lot of Americans more ignorant about most of the issues, because why should we even look it up if we only have a choice between one side and one side? We don't need to care about these other issues because, you know, we might in reality be on the same page. But I think on the other side, you know, we're talking about people with moderate or more centered ideas. On the other side of that, it's also this hate mongering we're seeing. I always call it this ping pong effect, or this kind of a pendulum swing effect, is that, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, yeah, you had people that were on conservative or liberal sides, left or right. And they always found time to agree with each other. You know, Ronald Reagan would have whiskey with Tip O'Neill, a Republican and Democrat Speaker of the House, you know, every night to go over, you know, issues in the country. No more that happens. And so what we saw years ago was that people could come together and it wouldn't break apart a family. But as one side got more vehement, you know, oh, we don't like you and now you're shutting down our thing. Well, we're going to shut down your thing. And then it goes back. Well, we're going to shut down three things that you do. And I think it's that pendulum swing that's gone back and forth to a point where now it's complete hatred of anything anybody else says. And the pendulum has not stopped.
No, and you're absolutely right. And if we had a third party, the problem is that we can't get financing for a third party because the machine that is the left and the right will not allow that to happen. So we can't seem to get anybody to get traction in a third party, which might be that middle person, which we could all use. But, you know, the politics being what it is, it's that's very difficult to do. So you're right. They just have to go with one or the other. And it's not a really always a good choice. Taz, is it the same in the UK for you?
Well, not really. We did have a third party. We have lots of parties. The ones people talk about most predominantly is Conservative, which would be our right, Labour, which would be our left. And then there's the Liberal Democrats, who were seen as being very liberal. In fact, that used to be my party of choice. And then there's the Green Party, which has kind of been up and coming over the past few years, which is very environmentally conscious. But a lot of people say, well, they don't know enough about their policies to vote. But what's really skewed it over here and made it more left versus right is a few years back when we were in danger of having a hung parliament, so two people in control, it was the Liberal Democrats were in a position where whichever part, broad brush to make it easy to understand for everyone, because it was a very complex issue, but it left the Liberal Democrats essentially in the position where whichever of the two major parties they sided with, they'd be the ones with majority of control. And of course, everyone who'd always voted Lib Dem expected that they'd go Labour because it's more left. And they sided with the Conservatives. Now, of course, that meant that our other left-ish party kind of lost ground. And certainly I haven't voted for them since. It made a lot of people lose faith in them, which really just leaves Conservatives, Labour and Greens. So Greens now really, really would fit the bracket of loony left for a lot of people in terms of opinion. And now our Labour Party has gone far more socialist, and our Conservative Party or the Tories seem to have gone further right. So again, it's created that massive, massive split. But of course, the other issue over here, and I don't know what it's like there, is voter apathy. I mean, this is something where a lot of people would argue I'm wanting to take away free will, but I would love over here to see compulsory voting. But I think what happens is so few people now don't bother to vote. I don't want to get involved in politics. I don't want to do it. It's just a game. It's control. It means that a tiny proportion essentially are deciding the fate of the country. So that makes, for me, that makes things very, very uncomfortable.
I think we have that same issue here where people don't want to vote. Actually, they're just tuning out because the conversation is so negative that they just tune out of it now. So. Yeah. What we do get is the people that are passionate on one side or the other fighting with each other. But all those people in the middle, they just feel disenfranchised at this point.
They just fall down the gulf in the middle, don't they? The irony is, that, of course, all the time that people feel disenfranchised and then don't vote, it's actually going to get more and more political and more heated. And that whole idea of, well, I'm not going to bother voting, not playing into the system, would only ever work if everybody stopped voting. So for me, it needs to be either everybody stops voting or everybody votes. It makes it messy the way we have it at the moment for me.
Right. And this goes to the article that we're looking at where it says take responsibility. And voting is one of those things where we're taking responsibility for what happens to our own future in our own country. Yeah. And I mean, people just absolutely need to see that, because tuning out to me is just not an answer to this. All you do is you put your future in somebody else's hands.
It's difficult to argue that, isn't it, when people say that their choice to not vote is actually a political move on their part, that they are making a political choice to not engage in politics, and that's them making a stand. You're not. You're just dropping the rest of the country in the shit.
Exactly. I want to bring it to another one of the points on this article, which I really like, and that's work diligently and consistently on meaningful goals. And Jennifer, I wanted to see if you could speak to that for a minute, because this article says that one of the things that nurses note that people regret the most is not following their goals in life. So at the point when people are, you know, on their deathbed, they're saying that that's their regret, that they didn't go after their goals.
And you talk about goals. One of my goals is to not have this donkey in my backyard go off every 5 seconds. I get worried about that. So of these radio shows. But speaking of that, I love the thing about goals, because I think, you know, we hear all these things about we hear all these things about how goals should be, you know, smart, they should be achievable, and all these ready to fill, but we stop making them. And I think, and this is myself, you know, we stop making them because in my tendency, it's been that I'll set a goal. And then when I don't hit it, or actually going back to the beginning of this show, I don't meet that expectation that I was supposed to reach this goal. I was supposed to achieve this. And then I just sort of give up on setting goals, and it just become these daily lists. And even those I can't always check off in time. And so my goals become far and far back on the back burner. But I think it's important to look at some of the long-term goals and even things that I didn't realize were goals, but that were successes, because sometimes all we need, I know for myself, all I need is just a little bit of perspective on the successes that have happened in my life or when I have done something. Yeah, sure. Maybe there were some goals or tasks or checklists or little goals that I didn't meet or I didn't reach in time when I thought I should, but there were overarching successes and risks that I took that succeeded. And that's all hand in hand with goals. And so rather than not setting them, you know, it's important for me to get the strength, start setting them again. I look back on the successes I've had. I mean, my goodness, I went to law school and graduated from it. You know, I became an attorney. I passed the bar. And these were things that maybe I didn't put down as goals, but they were successes. They were risks. They were something that happened. And that very easily could have been a goal, a major goal. And to give that, really that confidence in ourselves to say, okay, I'm going to set another goal then. If I could do that, you know, if I could go through this, or if I could go even through this hard time and come out on the other side, okay, then I can set a goal for something. And I think, you know, part of setting goals, no matter how small they may seem to you objectively, setting any goal that you know you can accomplish and that you set your mind to accomplish, it gives us that gratitude. It gives us that perspective, that confidence that we need to keep moving forward in life to say, I set a goal and I achieved it. And that's that self-confidence that we all need to do anything that might scare us.
Absolutely. And I have to tell you a little story because you went through and you became an attorney. And, you know, I'm just so in awe of that. I went to school to be an attorney. What I did is I ended up going into the police department instead. But one of the things that discouraged me from being an attorney when I was in school was I had a date with a guy who was an attorney or who was studying in my classes to be an attorney. And I wanted to be a prosecutor and he wanted to be a defense attorney. And the reason that he wanted to be a defense attorney, he went through this whole dissertation at dinner about how he was going to defend people. And it was all a game. And the point of the game is to win. It's not if they're guilty or they're not guilty. The point of the game is for him to win. And I was appalled and discouraged. And I've seen it so many times over and over with attorneys that I'm kind of glad that I didn't go into that field, although there's so many fields that you could go into, just like you have, a completely different type of a field. But I just found that really discouraging. But as far as goals and passion, I mean, we talk about passion, and passion is something, and goals are something that can happen every day for little things. It doesn't have to be a huge goal in life. It can just be a small goal. And it could be a goal every day. And I'm not a really good goal setter. So I don't really sit and write out a plan and, you know, follow it. But I set my little goals every day. I have to do this. I have to do this. And all those things take me for me where I want to go. Now, nobody is better at passion and goals than Taz Thornton, who who teaches passion and goals to people. Isn't that right, Taz?
Well, sort of. But I'm going to put a different spin on things here because I dumped the word goals a while back, and there's a reason for that. You know, before I hit my breakdown when I was high flying, and, you know, I was news editor of our local newspaper group by the time I was 18, which was unheard of. You know, I was UK director for one of the world's biggest multinational publishers by the time I was in my early 30s. Goals and I were best friends. But I've now stopped talking about goals and started talking about intentions because I found for a lot of people, me included, we're getting a bit jaded by this idea of goals. And I think it's because so many people in corporate world are told they need to write a list of goals. And we end up writing these things purely from the head, head-heart disconnect. And when we think of goals, we too readily think things like, well, I need to write something because my boss is going to see this. So I want to go and spend time working around every department so that I understand the inner mechanisms of the company more. And then that flows into our personal life. And we say things like, I'm going to join a gym. Balls, are you? No, you're not. Stop writing goals from your head. So I moved this into set an intention. And an intention for me is a goal with soul. And it takes it away from just doing head-based stuff into things that we absolutely want to achieve. Mind, body, spirit, things that will genuinely fill us up, not things we think we should be aiming for.
I love that.
Thank you. Just to pick up on the point in this article where, you know, the lady talked about regrets of people on their deathbeds. A few years back, I was running a seminar in a business show, and it was one of these make it happen seminars. And all the guys in the room sat there in their starched collars and their designer ties and, well, I want to make sure that we've expanded our business into Saudi and into the US and into other areas of the Far East. And younger people saying, well, I want to have this much money in the bank and I want a 5-bedroom house and this, that and the other. And one lady was sitting at the back of the room, and in a quiet voice she said, you know, I used to work in palliative care, and not once toward the end of life did I ever hear anyone saying, I wish I'd expanded the company or I wish I'd made more money. At the end of life, people say things like, I wish I'd snogged Fred. I wish I'd married the brother. I wish I'd spent more time outside. I wish I'd spent more time with my kids. Their intentions
that matter. Those are absolutely great points, and we're going to pick that up on the other side of the break.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners. I'm here. It's Sam Thornton. I'm here with Life Liberty. And I'm here with the wonderful Jennifer Breeden and, of course, Linda Martinelli. And we'll normally have Malcolm, but we've taken control of the ship. This is a mutiny somewhere. We have tied up Malcolm, we've gagged him, we've put him in a cupboard, and we might let him out towards the end of the show because this is all about girl power. Am I right, ladies?
You're right.
Yay. Okay, so we've been talking about this list. We've been talking about all the things that we can do to allow ourselves to live better lives in 2018. And of course, it's not just about 2018. It's about living better lives for as long as we have, and maybe next time, depending on your viewpoint on that. We've talked about all kinds of things. And then the fourth point on this list we're looking at is the importance of doing the hard things, losing the expectation that everything in life should be easy. And, you know, this is something I talk about a lot. So many people whinge or whine and complain and say, well, it's just not fair. Well, newsflash, guys, life isn't fair. When you popped out into this world, there was nobody there with a set of terms and conditions and a little certificate saying, welcome to life, everything's going to be fair. So we need to stop moaning. We need to stop complaining. And instead of saying that it's not fair, we need to say, well, hey, that didn't feel fair, but this life is my life, and it's up to me to do something about it. So that's my big thing there. Stop complaining. Life ain't going to be fair. And in terms of the hard things, we have developed, I believe, in the loosely termed Western world, such a reliance on this swipe your card and get it now culture. We can't do that. We are missing out on so much because we just want to get it quickly and easily at the touch of a button. We're not smelling the coffee anymore. We're not smelling the fresh grass clippings. We're not getting out into nature. Well, one of us has a donkey in the backyard. So actually, let's throw over there now. Jennifer, tell us about doing the hard thing, including your donkey.
Oh, yeah. You can never trust a donkey, really. Apparently you can, though. They're good projectors.
Okay, excellent. So what about this thing about doing the hard things? Jennifer, what does that mean to you?
Well, this is such a great topic because doing the hard things to me is kind of what I'm doing now. And, you know, I have lived this life where, yes, I can do this attorney thing, this criminal law thing. I can travel to the Middle East. I can go to Iraq, to Saudi Arabia, to Egypt, to all these places alone. And to me, that that wasn't really the hard thing. It was my passion. It's what I loved. It was freedom. The hard thing for me, because everybody's hard thing is different. The hard thing for me has mm-hmm. been getting married to a guy, a single dad that had four kids. Mm-hmm. And moving to a farm. I mean, I've lived in Miami, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., and I had to move to Wisconsin in the middle of nowhere because the kids are here. They have got their mommy or their school here, and it has been coming here. That's been the hardest thing, is the fear. Sometimes for me, it's the fear that, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this work, or that we can't make it work from here, or learning how to step into this role of like loving kids and this maternal nature and being good enough to see them grow, and also being there for a husband, for a partner, because all of this is new to me. I was really comfortable being alone, having a dog and a couple cats, and just, you know, you leave them. You can't really lock up kids in a cage when you leave for the weekend, or, you know, send them to your neighbors. I guess you can, depending on your neighbors, but it's a totally different ball game, and it's really, really scary. And that's been the hard thing, is just kind of laying down everything and say, okay, this doesn't mean I can't do my work anymore. It just means we shift a little bit, and that we just restructure plans, and we do it together. And maybe we make it better by doing it together, but it is hard. And it's every day. It's hard. Every day there's a new challenge. Every day, even as my husband learns to fight these righteous battles, to show his kids, to never just turn over and take it, or, you know, to be a doormat when there's injustice done to you. It's helping him, giving him the strength to fight, and telling him it's okay. And some of these things are hard because it's, you know, it's not anything I'm used to. I'm used to only having one schedule to deal with, and that was myself. And I'm also used to protecting people in different countries that I'm not related to, and that I don't have this heart investment in. And it is a really hard thing to do. Sometimes just stepping back and letting God be God, or, you know, letting other things go, when that's what I do for a living, is I fight for people, just as I'm going to fight for my family now. And so it's been really hard to give this up, but also rewarding. And I think that's how I can learn to accept some of the things that are the most hard, is that maybe the plan for me wasn't to always be alone. Maybe the plan was for me to, so to speak, have it all at this time, and learn how to adjust, learn a different aspect of myself that I haven't known. So I think for everybody, it's different. What's the hardest thing for you? For some people, it would be traveling to Middle East. It wasn't for me. And that's why we need each other so much.
Excellent. So what made you do that? Because a lot of people listening are going to be thinking, well, if it's that hard, why didn't you just stay single? What made you take that choice, take the hard path?
That's a great question. It was the guy. I just say that. Well, okay. I was single up until I was 34. Happily, never engaged, never married. Couple relationships, they're always terrible. And I got, as I got older, actually, a lot of people will say, well, no, as you get older, you know, you should lower your standards, and just, you know, because you're never going to get married the older you get. You're never going to find the right one. Well, my standards got higher. I needed somebody with integrity, with honesty. I need somebody that knew my career would not be a threat to him. And in a man, I'm sorry, ladies, that's very hard to find, because any woman that's educated and strong is an immediate threat to all men. And so for me, I was just like, I probably thought I'd be single forever, but finding somebody who I wouldn't be a threat to, who would want to appreciate, respect that career, know that I'm just not going to be, you know, I'm not going to give up my job for anything. Doesn't mean I can't love or anything else. And somebody who was going to be honest to a fault, almost to what people might consider to a fault, but honest, lots of integrity, just somebody I could always lean on, somebody that I wouldn't be afraid to be vulnerable in front of. And I met John. And we had been friends for a long time, but this is somebody who, without even knowing me, just said, I would always lay down anything so that you can keep doing what you're meant to do, what God's made you to do. And I'm going to make my life so that your strengths can be fulfilled despite all the work that I've done, because my heart is in my kids, is in this home, this family, and I'm going to support you in all of that. And it's just somebody, I can't explain, if it was just somebody I knew would always have my best interest and would want to see me become more. And that almost sounds selfish to say, but it's somebody that I'd be willing to respect as a husband and willing to, like, somebody that I just sometimes they need to come home and crumble. I got to be strong in my work. I study genocide and I have to be always on my A game studying these hard things. I need somebody whose heart's place is in loving me at the end of the day and being that rock for me. And when I met John, I finally had that, and it was a pretty freeing actually. And I knew that, I guess I've just, and I'm still in that phase, Taz, but like, it's just that I knew that this is my career. This is what I'm meant to do. And God's going to let that happen, whether I'm in Washington, D.C. or the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin, or in Mazatlan, Mexico, wherever it is, God's going to let this career go forward. And it's not going to stop because this is the man I'm supposed to be with. And that's what it is. It's kind of living on faith right now.
Oh, amazing stuff. So I'm just going to just wipe my eyes. I've got something in my eye at that point.
I feel like Jennifer's talking about my husband as well, because we have that same type of relationship where there's just total support from him for everything that I do and from me for everything that he does. I mean, how much more lucky can you get? But it's not just luck. Those are choices that Jennifer made, and those are choices that I made, and choices that you made in your relationship, Taz, that, again, it's about us making the right choices and being whole within ourselves first to be able to make those good choices. Because when we're not whole within ourselves, we don't make good choices. And one of the things that I really liked in this article was about distancing yourself from hurtful relationships. And that's always a big thing for me. My husband and I made a pact some years ago to really get rid of that kind of, I call it flotsam in our lives, of people that constantly caused us hurt or drama or, you know, just problems. And there's those kind of people that are constantly pulling at you and tugging at you. And I think that we need to be strong enough to say no to those people and to remove them from our lives. I mean, you don't have to say, I'm never talking to you again. You can just not see them very much or as often, because those kind of people pull you down so much and take so much of your energy. And that is interesting that it's in this article, because that was a big deal to us. And when we made that conscious decision that if somebody is having that kind of a toll on our psyche and our life, that we would remove ourselves from them, it's so freeing to be able to do that.
It's really tough, isn't it? I guess that comes under doing the hard things, because, you know, cutting away a relationship that isn't serving you, that can be really, really tough. Because, of course, sometimes we need to remove a relationship from our life that on paper doesn't look bad. It's not always to do with abuse or gaslighting. Sometimes it's just that this relationship is keeping me down. You know, we talked earlier, didn't we, about surrounding ourselves with successful people, people who are a couple of steps ahead of us. So where's the line there? Because so many of the kind of personal development, again, in air quotes, gurus have this idea that you should just cut out of your life anyone that doesn't serve you. So often in our lives, you know, so many of these personal development, in air quotes again, gurus tell us that we need to just cut these people out of our lives if they're neg heads, if they drain us, if they're not of a level that's inspiring to us. But that sometimes for me feels so cut and dried. I mean, these people could be your parents, your loved ones. How far do you go? Where does doing the hard things actually become doing the heartless and the unfair things? Where do we find the balance with that, ladies?
When we made that decision, it wouldn't be cutting somebody completely out of our lives. It's not allowing them to drain us. And if it were my parents or if it were one of my kids, I just would have to be around them less or stop a conversation that started taking that toll on me. I'm not willing to do that anymore, Taz. I'm not willing to allow somebody to take that piece of me that I don't want to give. So I don't think that you have to be heartless at all. I think that you just pull away somewhat and do other things, fill that time with other things and other people that do bring you happiness.
Which is great for us, because one of the reasons we're on this show is we've been there, done it, we've trained a lot, we've lived a lot of life, and I think a lot of us on this show have come to that balance point where we've sorted out a lot of our crap. A lot of the people listening to this, of course, they're not necessarily going to be there. They might not be as sorted within themselves where they can just make adjustments to not let things penetrate in the same way. So what advice can we give to people listening who are perhaps surrounded by negative people, people who aren't serving them? How can we help? How can we help listeners do this? Jennifer, what do you think?
Gosh, yeah, it's a good thing how to surround ourselves with people that encourage us. I think it's the difference between cutting people out completely and learning to surround ourselves with people that lift us up too. And just know, actually, I had a friend that gave me a word picture once in terms of unhealthy people and things like that. And the word picture was thinking of it like the rings of Saturn, right? So there's Saturn mm-hmm. in the middle and there's all these rings around it. And it's and she said to me that people in her life, she considers on those rings. And so most people that come in, maybe they're Facebook friends or they'll meet up once every few months or whatever. They're on that outer ring there. And as it comes closer, it's that circle. And so it's not ever cutting them out. She says, if they do something or they don't lift me up or they bring me down, but they still have some kind of tie in my life, I'm not going to kick them out of the universe, but they're just going to be on that last ring there. And there's certain things that she set up as boundaries that she would do with people on those last ring. They can be invited uh-huh. to birthday parties, things like that, but they're not relied on for your heart's, you know, yearning for that need that you need from relationship and fellowship with people. And that was okay. It made it okay. So it made the unhealthy things that they do not so toxic in her life, because that toxicity was only on that outer ring. Whereas the inner ring, it was careful. It was calculated. It was, these are people that lift me up, that I can truly be around. And then it made her okay. So for me, it was that word picture really helped to show, okay, so just what ring are you on? How do I set those boundaries around which relationships are going to fulfill me the most?
I love that. That makes
Isn't
that
so great?
Much sense.
It does. Awesome. It's such a good word picture that you can really draw from. And then another point that this article says, which ties right into that, it says that, you know, when you say goodbye, you can say hello. So when you mm-hmm. do get rid of things in your life that are not so good for you, you open up a door that allows you to look through for other things that are better for you. And we have to be willing to do that, because when we tie ourselves up with things that are not good for us, we're not available for things that are good for us.
Yeah, it's that old adage, isn't it? When one door closes, another one opens. So absolutely, we need to be aware of all of it. So let's move it on a bit and try and cover some of the other points on this list. There's a number five on this list we've been talking about. I love this one. Study your mistakes closely and learn from them. Now, this is another thing I find myself talking about quite a lot. For me, if we can learn a lesson from something, then it actually stops being a mistake or a failure. Sometimes, for me, the biggest, most amazing, beautiful life lessons just happen to be wrapped up in really shitty paper. So, you know, we need to dig deep, but we need to find the courage to dig deep to say, well, okay, this situation just happened. It wasn't very pleasant. It upset me. Maybe I'm still feeling upset about it, but what can I learn from that? It's my belief that things don't happen to us. Things happen for us. It's my belief that things don't happen to us. Things happen for us. But we need to be able to get ourselves into a place where we're clear enough, have enough clarity, have enough distance from that we can dig deep and find the reason. Why did this need to happen for us? What do we need to learn? How do we stop this pattern repeating, maybe? What about you guys? What do you think? Linda, what do you think about this point?
Well, I think it's a great point. And, you know, when something bad happens, a lot of times something good comes from that. So when something bad happens, just like the article says, you need to stop and, first of all, deal with that thing and then take the lessons from it. And I remember at one point there was, I had a really large client, and they, that company switched buyers. And I mean, just in a heartbeat, that buyer wanted to work with somebody else that they knew previously. And I was absolutely devastated. And I'm beating myself up thinking, what did I do wrong? What, you know, where did I go wrong? Well, after you think about all of those things and you deal with the shock and the pain and the financial consequences, then you can look at it from afar, as Malcolm always says, the 30,000 foot view. What can I do? What could I do better? Well, for that situation, there's nothing I could have done better. But what happened from that situation is just what we talked about, is that it opened another door, and my company's sales were actually better without that client because I realized after, you know, some introspection that they took so much time and so much energy and were such high maintenance that I was able to go replace that plus some. So things are not always as bad as we think that they are. And we just need to look at them and see what lesson we can learn and move on, because there's no point in just, you know, staying with it.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're not going to get through all of the points today, but if you want to look those up, anyone who's listening, if you go to markandangel.com, that's Mark with a C and angel.com, there's a wonderful list there. There's loads of great content. The last two steps on that list are number 6, choosing a positive and effective response, and number 7, directly confronting the thoughts that worry you. There's some amazing, amazing stuff there. I'd like to say a massive, massive welcome to the... I'd like to say a massive, massive thank you to the amazing Jennifer Breeden and the wonderful Linda Martinelli. If you're wondering why they're quiet, they've just gone to untie Malcolm and remove the gag and let him come back so that he can wrap up and talk to you and give his usual roundup until next time, friends. So, Malcolm, come
here
on.
Here I am. I have been listening, as everyone else has, to the three of you. And, of course, I think everybody should know how remarkable, how fantastic all of you are. I mean, you've been just tremendous. And this was a good opportunity to have. So what they did is they literally tied me up, friends, and kept me off the mic and said, we're going to run, what you call it, a mutiny, Taz, I think you said?
Yeah.
Some mutiny?
Yeah.
So some sort of a real live mutiny. But what a great conversation. I have been listening, as everybody has, to this. And there are so many things. The links to this column, 18 Uncomfortable Things You Need to Do If You Don't Want to Regret 2018. Again, this to regret any part of your life. This is all about empowering you. The link to that will be right in the show post at America Out Loud, friends. You'll see it right there as this show goes to podcast after talk radio. Well, listen, I want to thank all of you for being part of this conversation today. Our season finale, again, please come back Wednesday, May 30th. Will be the finale here of this entire season. And it's been absolutely a tremendous ride. Stay with us again. Push the show out there. Let people know about it. It doesn't get any better than this. And when it comes to empowering people and talking about the things that really matter. And that's what we do here on Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Big, big thank you. And again, Taz Thornton, Linda Martinelli, Jennifer Breeden. This is Malcolm Out Loud. To be continued, friends. We'll be right back.